Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdropper. On today's show, what happens when law enforcement wants to look at someone's data, but that data is stored in Ireland? What happens when a company like Microsoft gets served a warrant, but again, the data is stored in Ireland? Well, last week, the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decided in favor of Microsoft's challenge of a warrant demanding that the company turn over emails stored abroad. Joining me to discuss this is Greg Nogheim, Director of the Freedom, Security, and Technology Project at the Center for Democracy and Technology, that is CDT for short. Greg, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
So this is a landmark case in privacy, and it's really an informative case about how we think about law enforcement being able to get data that are stored all over the world. And this is a very common thing where there are data about Europeans stored in the United States, data about Americans stored in Europe. The internet is naturally a global entity and data flows all over the place. But this really causes jurisdictional problems when law enforcement need access to data. So just tell us the basics of the case. This was a criminal case. Why was Microsoft being asked to do this and why did they fight back?
So the Department of Justice served a warrant on Microsoft demanding that it disclose data that Microsoft had stored in Ireland. Actually, the government was seeking two types of data. First, communications content of a user whose nationality was never identified. And second, the metadata of that same user. Microsoft had access to the metadata here in the United States. It turned it over pursuant to the warrant. It said, though, with respect to the content, that the content was stored in Ireland. And it told the U.S. government that it needed to trigger the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty between the U.S. and Ireland to have the government of Ireland compel Microsoft to turn over that data. It said that the warrant doesn't reach the data stored abroad. The court agreed with Microsoft. It rejected the U.S. government's contention that warrants operate like subpoenas, that they're the equivalent of subpoenas, and that wherever the data is held by a U.S. provider, that provider has to go get it and bring it back to the United States.
So the basic principle that the court upheld is that the warrant has to originate in the jurisdiction where the data are stored. So you can't serve an American warrant to a company if the data are in Ireland. You need Ireland to serve that warrant. And same would apply for the U.S. If a Irish police department needed access to data about a European or an Irish person, but the data were in America, they would need the U.S. to get the warrant, right? It has to originate in the country where the law enforcement agency is operating.
That's right. That's right. And the way the court looked at it was, well, what is ECPA all about, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act? It actually focused on the Stored Communications Act, which is part of ECPA. What's this statute all about? And the court looked at the legislative history. It determined that the statute was all about protecting privacy. What the government said it was all about, which is disclosure to the government when it has a warrant. And so it looked through the statute through a privacy lens, and it asked itself, did Congress intend for this statute to cover data outside the United States? And it didn't find any congressional intention to that effect. It then applied the presumption under U.S. law, which was established in a Supreme Court case called Morrison, that statutes are presumed to apply domestically, not extraterritorially, unless Congress gives a contrary indication. Finding none in the statute, the court said it applies only domestically.
And it would be hard to imagine that Congress in 1986, before we're even talking about long-term data storage, I mean, we've talked about ECPA on the show in the context of this arbitrary rule that law enforcement are allowed to get access to emails that are older than 180 days. And we talk about that specifically because ECPA was written in 1986. Storing emails for longer than 180 days was a luxury, if anything, and no one did that. So, Congress didn't really see a problem there. But of course, it'd be hard for Congress to contemplate the cloud. You know, to the early 2000s, the invention of Gmail, basically people storing things indefinitely all over the place and not even thinking about it. And listeners probably have data stored all over the world and they don't even think about it. So it'd be a hell of an assumption to make that Congress in 1986 really thought that that they wanted law enforcement to be able to serve warrants for data stored in Ireland. I mean, how is the government even making this argument? What's their motivation here? Are they driven by just they want to surveil people more, or do they really just have a legitimate interest in getting this information, and do we need a proper system to handle law enforcement getting access to data across the Atlantic?
Put yourself in the shoes of the Department of Justice. They do need access to data. And from their perspective, it really shouldn't matter where the provider chose to store it. They can't control that. Users can't really control that either. Some of the providers, for example, will store your data in multiple places at the same time. Microsoft, when you sign up for your Hotmail account, for example, and this is laid out in the lower court decisions and in the upper court decision, Microsoft asks you, well, where are you? And it asks you that because it wants to locate your data near you in their data center near you, because that reduces latency. It makes it so your internet experience is better because they're serving up data quicker to you because you're near the data. So it makes sense from law enforcement's perspective to be able to access the data no matter where it's stored. On the other hand, it doesn't make that much sense from the perspective of comity between countries. You don't really want a world where every country in the world says it can access the data because its process operates outside of its boundaries. I mean, then what rule does the provider follow? Then they're caught between a rock and 1,000 hard places.
Yeah, is that what would have happened if Microsoft lost? I mean, let's talk through worst case scenarios, because it might be entirely possible that this is a good outcome in the short term for privacy, but that it doesn't resolve the legitimate needs of law enforcement to get data. Why are privacy advocates so excited about this ruling, assuming that it staved off something bad from happening? What is that thing that we were worried about?
The thing that we were worried about was that if the U.S. said and enforced a rule that its warrants applied to compel the disclosure of data that is stored outside the United States, well, you can bet that 50 countries would come knocking on our door saying that their laws compel the disclosure of data stored in the United States.
And you could imagine a country like Russia or China that would love nothing more than to get into the Facebook accounts or email accounts of dissidents and journalists who are writing negative things about the government. They would love a situation where a company, a global company like Facebook, Microsoft, or Google, is at the mercy of 200 countries' laws about data, because that would probably favor oppressive regimes over less repressive regimes.
Yeah, it was the motivator for our position. I mean, basically, for the particular individual whose data was being sought, our position, which was that the U.S. warrant doesn't apply, it can't be used to get the data, means that Irish law would apply. So our position was basically, well, swap out American law for Irish law for this particular request. Is Irish law better than American law? Probably not. Probably not. So what we really wanted to do, as you pointed out, Evan, the motivator for our position was to avoid the world where a bunch of governments lay claim to the same data, saying that their process operates outside their territorial jurisdiction. I would be the first to concede that location of data is probably not the best test for whether a country ought to have jurisdiction over it. Data can move. Data does move. It's held in two places at the same time. A copy is here. A company might move data across the globe just because it wants to relieve network congestion in one part of the world.
Or electricity is cheaper in another part of the world. I mean, it could be a variety of factors why a company might choose to store data. One factor might be that that country has good laws about human rights and free speech, but it could have nothing to do with that. It could just be, like you said,
cheap.
Practical congestion. Yep. Yeah.
So location is not the best test for jurisdiction, but it's the test we have now.
So right now, I guess we've decided, or at least your position is at CDT, that Microsoft winning was preferable because at least then you go back to that imperfect system where location is jurisdiction. What would a good system look like, though, if this doesn't solve the issue? Law enforcement, the Department of Justice have a legitimate need to get access to data. What does a good system look like?
A good system would be one where a deity sets great human rights standards for access to data.
So we just need a supernatural intelligent designer to come in and fix the problem. Is there a bill for that? How do listeners sign up?
We're not going to get our ideal world, but we're going to have something second best.
Okay.
One approach that could work if proper protections were built in would be one where countries make agreements between themselves to allow the other country to gain access to data under the requesting country's rules. That way you wouldn't have this conflict that there is now. It would be permissive, but you'd have to have good, strong rules in the requesting country. And that's where the rub is right now. So Department of Justice has proposed that Congress enact legislation that would permit countries with which the U.S. strikes a deal to gain access to content by serving their orders directly on U.S. providers.
And Ireland is a member of the European Union, so theoretically this type of negotiation or this type of deal would be negotiated with the entire member bloc, so...
I think that their plan is to go country by country.
Oh, okay.
So...
Then what's the point of the EU? I guess everyone should just Brexit, right?
the first agreement would be with the UK.
Oh, yeah.
This agreement has been drafted. It's not been released. But we look at it with a lot of concern because UK surveillance law compared to US law, it doesn't stack up well. Under current UK law, for example, the Home Secretary, roughly equivalent to the US Attorney General plus a piece of DHS.
Yeah, it's kind of, basically they call it like the order minister, like all aspects of maintaining order in society fall under the Home Secretary in the UK.
The Home Secretary issues the warrants. Not a court, the Home Secretary.
Yeah.
Now, that's a completely inadequate system.
And I had your colleagues on the show last week to talk about a system where the FBI asks other FBI agents to, like, co-sign its national security letters. I mean, the basic point being, if you're going to have checks and balances in a republic or a democratic system, you can't have the agency that wants to surveil be in charge of approving those surveillance requests. You have to have some other party, and that's why the U.S. has courts. But theoretically, this legislation would allow countries like the U.S. that have a good system for issuing warrants to then strike an agreement with Ireland. I mean, these are two countries that theoretically have decent protections, decent human rights. So the point was not necessarily that Microsoft was so horrified at the request. It was more about setting that terrible precedent that other countries could then, with bad laws, could then ask for data. So the country by country at least would force us to look at every single nation and say, do they have adequate protections? Do they have a system of justice that we can endorse?
And who's going to decide whether those protections are adequate? Is it going to be the Department of Justice, which is involved in the day-to-day law enforcement activities? Or is it going to be some objective decision maker? Does the objective decision maker exist? Are they objective?
Just hanging out with that deity that you talked about
earlier.
That's what I meant. They have the same book club.
Here's the rub of it. It can't be just the DOJ consulting with state, which is what DOJ has proposed. Maybe Congress needs to be involved. Right now, Congress approves, at least the Senate does, approves all the MLAT agreements. Maybe something like that needs to be established. There needs to be a transparent process for making the assessment about whether the country's laws have adequate human rights protection.
And maybe civil society groups like Tech Freedom and CDT need to be involved in that because we might have a different perspective on what adequacy looks like than the Department of Justice.
So I think DOJ would permit us to write them a letter saying what we think is adequate.
Yeah, you can always write a letter, right?
But you really have to have a process where DOJ's decision is subject to some checks and balances. They have not proposed such a process. And I'll tell you, Evan, it's really hard to find one that's going to have international credibility. You might find one that has good domestic credibility, DOJ will resist that as well. But right now, what they're proposing is that they are the deity, that they will make this decision.
I'm glad you brought up the credibility point, because that brings us to Privacy Shield. So one of the things, the backdrop to this is there has been a blow up over or data transfers across the Atlantic. And due to the Snowden revelations in 2013 and a determination by Europe's highest court that U.S. privacy protections were inadequate, the Safe Harbor Agreement was struck down. Now we have this new Privacy Shield Agreement so that companies like Amazon can send data across the Atlantic without the fear of reprisal or basically under the assumption that what they're doing is okay. Does what we do on this issue inform those types of negotiations? Because if the concern is what does law enforcement do with data stored about Europeans, you could imagine that the United States entering into an agreement with Ireland that is not respective of human rights would not bode well for the future of Privacy Shield and agreements like that, right?
So I think the issues are fairly separate, actually, that Privacy Shield is about the commercial flow of data and then accessing the data in the United States under either the criminal or the intelligence regime. I think that the issue in Europe is more about accessing the data under the intelligence regime. And it should be, because frankly, when the data is stored here, there are not adequate protections for the Europeans and other people abroad. The U.S. government uses Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to access the data. There's no court order requirement. There's no probable cause requirement. It's very loose. On the criminal side, when the Europeans' data is transferred to the United States, the rules are actually quite good. If they were the only rules that applied, Privacy Shield would survive.
Right. The big distinction here is that when it comes to intelligence, you don't necessarily need warrants, and that's maybe what led to privacy or safe harbor being struck down. But at least in this case, we're talking about probable cause, not indiscriminate mass surveillance. We're talking about law enforcement bodies that, at least in theory, have a legitimate interest in the person that they are trying to track.
And the criminal side, they have a warrant issued by a judge based on a finding of probable cause. Evan, I have to turn back to the UK because I need to be fair to their system. They are rewriting their laws. They will require that a judicial commissioner, who could be a retired judge or a current judge, sign off on the Secretary of State's, the Home Secretary's, determination that the surveillance is warranted. Now, we would look for a more searching inquiry than what they contemplate. It's basically a deferential review of what was already decided.
Kind of like the FISA court?
The way a U.S. court would evaluate an agency decision. Gives it deference under a Supreme Court standard.
Chevron.
Involving the Chevron case, yes. and we would want a more searching merits review of that decision. But anyway, they're moving in a good direction, and I didn't want to leave the impression that they weren't.
So for all you British listeners, send your hate mail not to Greg, but to Barron.
And then the other thing is, though, what's the standard that must be met to govern that surveillance demand? It's not going to be probable cause. That's a U.S. creation. It's a very good standard as compared to what the rest of the world uses. It's a more, flexible standard that the U.K. would use. And I think the question for Congress and for privacy advocates is whether that's adequate. And we're looking deeply into that now.
So where is this going? I mean, you mentioned that very shortly after the decision where the Department of Justice lost to Microsoft, that it's almost like they had a bill ready to go anticipating this problem. Do you see Congress legislating in this area? Do you see a nation-by-nation negotiation emerging out of this? Or are we going to have a temporary situation where law enforcement can't get what it needs because of this precedent?
It's a big question. Let me give a big answer.
Yeah.
First, the Department of Justice is highly likely to march into the Second Circuit right away and get a stay of that decision.
So meaning that at least temporarily until they can appeal, they will be operating business as usual.
Right. And then they will probably get a stay, and then they will appeal to either the Supreme Court or to the full Second Circuit. I don't think this is a case that will go away without Supreme Court review. I think it's going to happen. So there's some time that's going to happen before the issue is kind of thrust on Congress.
Yeah.
Meantime, this legislation that DOJ has proposed, it doesn't solve the whole problem for DOJ because it only involves countries with which the U.S. strikes an agreement. So there's going to be a lot of other countries where a U.S. provider might want to store data. It's just not covered. So if the decision stands, DOJ still has a problem with respect to that data held by some providers. Now, Evan, one other thing to think about is how are U.S. providers going to respond if this decision is upheld on appeal? Will they move data abroad in order to keep it out of the hands of the U.S. government when it has a warrant? I actually kind of doubt it, because then they'd be putting it in the hands of another government that probably has lesser process.
Yes, as bad as our surveillance state can be in the United States, and both of our organizations have criticized it, we could do a lot worse. And it's important for people to remember that there are places that don't even tip their hat to oversight and due process and checks and balances, where even at our worst, sometimes we're doing better than a lot of other countries are.
But as we said, Evan, companies might expatriate data for reasons completely unrelated to what the legal regime is that governs it.
The cost of electricity.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that this is the beginning of a story. I think that we really need to establish sound rules that permit foreign governments to gain access to data stored here, or something like that. There has to be something to solve this problem, because there's a lot of pressures that could lead to some bad results. Let me give you one example of the pressure that could come out of the case. It could lead toward an incentive. It could incentivize data localization.
Yes.
By governments, you know, they go to the U.S. provider and say, well, if the rule is going to be that our process doesn't reach data stored outside our borders, you got to store your stuff inside our borders when it pertains to our people.
Yeah, and that is a huge problem. And basically, listeners, the term data localization refers to companies being required to store data about those citizens within those borders. So rather than having one data center in Ireland that might have data about people all over the world, the data about Irish citizens would have to be in Ireland. Data about Romanians would have to be in Romania. And that would not only be a business problem, but it threatens the free and open internet. It threatens the free flow of data. And you do not want also what we've referred to as digital protectionism, where, you know, think about anti-free trade sentiment on the internet and creating a bunch of small little internets that only, you know, pertain to those citizens. And you just do not want to fracture the internet in this way. So data localization is generally a problem that needs to be avoided. And you do not want to see countries moving towards that, because it can be very populist, it can be very nationalist, it could be appealing to voters in the short term, but it's not good for the internet.
Right, right. But say you're a France, right? And you've suffered a number of terrorist attacks.
Right.
And you want access to data in order to prevent those attacks. Data localization might be something to which you turn.
Yeah.
So my view is we've got to give these governments an out, a way to get data without compelling it to be held locally. And that way, though, the way out has to be highly protective of privacy. That's what we're trying to drive toward.
And we'll certainly be looking out to see if you have any proposals. Maybe they'll be a little bit more privacy-minded than the Department of Justice's. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Greg Nogheim, Director of the Freedom, Security, and Technology Project at the Center for Democracy and Technology. That's CDT for short. Greg, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show at media@techfreedom.org. Feel free to provide feedback on guests, topics, things you want to hear more about. Follow or find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review, because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.